Walk into the big avionics halls at Oshkosh this week, and you'll notice something. The crowds aren't standing around the glass panels anymore. Not the way they used to. Big screens are old news now. Everybody's got one. The crowds are standing around the little display units, the 2-inch tall boxes with a row of buttons mounted in a cutaway panel where an old vacuum gyro used to live. And the salesperson is pointing at a servo, a metal can the size of a soda can, with an arm on it, bolted to a wing spar. This is Radio Hangar, I'm Vector, and this is Clear Direct. Today we're talking about the quietest revolution in the general aviation cockpit. Not the panel, the autopilot behind it. Because here's what most people miss. The glass panel got all the headlines, but the thing that actually changed how a 1970s Cessna or Piper flies, the thing that took a 50-year-old airplane and gave it capability that used to belong to a King Air, was the digital autopilot retrofit. And it happened right here, on this show floor, one Oshkosh at a time. Let's break this down. This segment is supported by AviationSoul.com. They make aviation challenge coins that mark the real milestones. First solo private pilot instrument rated, CFI. The whole journey and something you can hold in your hand and set on the desk. Beautifully made, built to last, AviationSoul.com. So, let's start with what an autopilot actually is, because the word covers a lot of ground. At its simplest, an autopilot is a machine that holds the airplane where you point it. You want wings level, it holds wings level. You want a heading, it flies a heading. You want to descend at 500 feet a minute, it flies the descent. It does this by moving the flight controls for you. Aileron and elevator, sometimes rudder, and the way it moves those controls is with servos. A servo is just a small electric motor connected to the control cables or the control surface. The autopilot brain sends a signal, the motor turns, the surface deflects. That's the whole trick. Now here's where the story gets interesting. And here's where the technology actually changed. For decades, the autopilots in light airplanes were what we call rate-based. Follow me here, because this is the heart of it. A rate-based autopilot doesn't actually know which way the airplane is pointed. It doesn't know your pitch attitude or your bank angle. What it knows is rate of change. It has a little spinning gyro, usually a turn coordinator, and that gyro senses how fast you're rotating, how fast you're rolling into a turn, and it works backward from there. Think of it like driving a car with your eyes closed, steering only by the feeling of the car swaying left and right. You could probably keep it roughly straight, but you'd wander, you'd chase it, you'd never be smooth, and you'd never be precise, because you're guessing at position by feeling motion. That's a rate-based autopilot. And to be fair, they worked. Millions of hours flew behind them safely. The old Sentry units, the early 80s tech systems, they held a heading and tracked a course and got a lot of pilots home in the clouds. But they wandered, they hunted. In turbulence, they'd rock you back and forth, and they depended on that vacuum-driven or electric gyro that was one of the least reliable instruments on the panel. Now here's the shift. A digital attitude-based autopilot knows exactly where the airplane is pointed. Bank angle, pitch angle, in real time hundreds of times a second, because it's fed by the same solid-state attitude sensors that drive the glass panel. No spinning mechanical gyro, instead, a chip, tiny accelerometers and rate sensors etched into silicon. The same basic family of sensors that keeps your phone screen upright when you turn it sideways. The engineering term is micro-electromechanical systems, MEMS. And MEMS is the reason all of this got cheap enough to bolt into a trainer. So now, instead of guessing at position by feeling motion, the autopilot knows. It's driving with its eyes open. You command 30 degrees of intercept. It rolls smoothly to exactly 30 degrees and holds it, rocks steady, and then rolls out on the line without the wandering and the hunting. The data tells an interesting story here. Put a legacy airplane on an instrument approach behind an old rate-based unit, and then behind a modern attitude-based one, and the needle behavior is night and day. One chases, the other tracks like it's on rails. And that unlocks the feature that I think is the real crown jewel of the whole retrofit, something called GPSS. That stands for GPS steering. Sometimes you'll hear it called roll steering. Here's what that means in plain language. An old autopilot in heading mode flies whatever heading the little bug is set to. Straight line. So when you're navigating a route with turns in it, an airway with a bend, an approach with a curved leg, a hold, you, the pilot, had to keep twisting that heading bug at every turn, or the autopilot would happily fly you straight past the turn. GPSS changes the conversation entirely. Instead of the autopilot listening to a heading bug, it listens directly to the navigator. The GPS box computes the actual curved path, the smooth turn from this leg to the next, the entry into the holding pattern, the wind correction, all of it, and it hands the autopilot a stream of bank commands. Fly this much bank, now this much, now roll out. The autopilot just does what the navigator says. The airplane flies the flight plan, the whole flight plan, turn anticipation and all. You load the route on the ground, you couple it up after takeoff, and the airplane tracks the magenta line through every bend without you touching the heading bug once. That is a capability that 25 years ago lived in turbine airplanes with six-figure flight management systems. Now it's in a Cherokee. Let me give you the honest picture of how we got here, because this is where Oshkosh matters. This didn't start in the certified world. It started in the experimental hangars. The home-built crowd, the people building their own airplanes in the amateur-built category, they don't need the Federal Aviation Administration, the FAA, to approve every part. So the small avionics companies could build a digital autopilot, sell it into experimentals, and iterate fast. Get it flying, fix it, improve it, year over year. And where did they show it? Right here. The innovation displays at AirVenture became the proving ground. Every summer, a company would roll into Oshkosh with a servo that was a little smaller, a little cheaper, a brain that did a little more. The experimental builders would gather around, kick the tires, and buy. Then came the bridge to the certified world, and this is the part that genuinely reshaped the fleet. The companies took those digital autopilots and pushed them through what's called a supplemental type certificate, an STC. An STC is an FAA approval that says this piece of equipment is approved to be installed in this specific list of certified airplane models. Once you have that approval, and the list is long enough, a guy with a 50-year-old Skylane can walk into a shop and have a modern digital autopilot legally installed. Garmin's GFC 500 and its bigger sibling, the GFC 600, are the names most pilots know in that certified space. They rolled the approved model list out slowly, model by model, and announced the new airplanes on that list. Year after year, it shows like this one. TruTrack, which came up out of the experimental world, brought an affordable certified unit to market too, and got bought up as the whole segment consolidated. Bendix King put its own retrofit unit into the fight. The competition was real, and the competition drove the price down and the capability up. Now let's talk about the pros, honestly, and then the cons, just as honestly, because I promised you balance and this technology deserves both. The upside is enormous and it's not just convenience. Start with safety. Many of these digital autopilots include envelope protection. If you're hand flying and you get slow or you bank too steeply, the system can nudge you back towards safe flight. And they include a straight and level function. One button, you press it, and no matter what unusual attitude the airplane is in, it rolls the wings level and sets a safe pitch. For a pilot who blunders into the clouds without the training for it, that one button is a genuine lifesaver. It attacks the exact accident that has killed general aviation pilots for as long as we've kept records. Loss of control in the clouds. Second, the reliability jump. No vacuum pump, no spinning mechanical gyro, slowly wearing out and lying to you as it dies. Solid-state sensors don't have those failure modes. That alone removes one of the classic killers, the slow, deceptive instrument failure in instrument conditions. Third, capability. That GPSS roll steering, coupled approaches down to the missed approach point, altitude pre-select, where you dial in an altitude and the airplane levels off on its own. That reduces workload dramatically in exactly the phase of flight. Single pilot in the weather, where workload gets people hurt. Now, the cons. Because there are real ones. First, cost. And this is where I want to be careful. Yes, the technology got cheaper, but cheaper is relative. A modern digital autopilot installed is still a serious chunk of money. When you add it to a 50-year-old airframe, you can spend more on the autopilot than the airplane is nominally worth on paper. Whether that math works depends entirely on how you fly and how much you value the mission. It's not a small check. Second, and this is the one I want every pilot listening to really sit with. Automation dependency. Here's what most people miss about a really good autopilot. The better it is, the less you hand fly, and the less you hand fly, the rustier you get. We have decades of data from the airline world showing that pilots who lean too hard on the automation lose the raw stick and rudder edge. And when the automation quits or does something unexpected, they're behind the airplane. The digital autopilot is so smooth and so capable that it's genuinely tempting to let it fly everything from 400 feet after takeoff to the missed approach. And if you do that, you have to be honest with yourself about staying sharp by hand. The machine is a tool to reduce workload when you need it, not a way to stop being a pilot. Third, the automation surprise. These systems are deep. They have modes, armed modes, active modes, a mode that's waiting to capture an altitude, a mode that's tracking a course. And the number one question a confused pilot asks behind good automation is, what's it doing now? When the airplane does something you didn't expect, it's almost never a malfunction. It's the pilot not understanding which mode is active. That's a training problem, and it's a real one. You have to know your system cold. Every mode, what arms it, what triggers it, and how to turn the whole thing off instantly when you don't like what you're seeing. That last point is the non-negotiable. Every one of these autopilots has a disconnect. A red button on the yoke, usually, and a way to overpower it or pull the breaker. Knowing how to get the automation out of the loop right now without thinking is more important than knowing any fancy mode it offers. So what's the honest timeline, and where does this go? The retrofit wave is well underway, and it's not slowing down. The approved model lists keep getting longer. Airplanes that couldn't get a modern autopilot 5 years ago can get one now, and the next frontier you're seeing hinted at in these very exhibit halls is coupling the autopilot to more of the airplane. Automatic emergency descent if the pilot goes unresponsive. Emergency autoland, which we've talked about on this show before, that flies the airplane to a runway and lands it. Those live on top of exactly this foundation. None of it works without the attitude-based digital autopilot and the smart servos underneath. And the through line, the thing I really want you to take away, is this. The dramatic stuff, the auto land, the envelope protection, the airplane that recovers itself, all of it was built on a boring-looking metal can bolted to a spar and a 2-inch box of silicon that knows which way is up. The revolution wasn't the big screen, it was the servo. You can walk out onto this show floor right now and put your hand on it. My thanks to the avionics manufacturers who lay this hardware out on the tables at AirVenture every year, and to the FAA's own approved model list documentation for the certification picture. If you want the deeper cut, the mode logic, and the wiring of it all, we keep notes at radiohanger.com. So here's my challenge to you as you walk the halls this week. Go find the servo, not the screen, ask how it knows which way is up, because that's the answer to the whole thing. I'm Vector. Fly the airplane first, always, and let the machine help. See you next time on Clear Direct.